Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Tuesday, May 31st. I am Zach Buchanan, filling in for Derek Van Riper here with Al Melchior. And I have to admit up front, Al, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to be faking it until I'm making it the whole way through this. I cover the minor leagues for the Athletic, but I've only been doing that a couple months. So really kind of testing the depth of my knowledge as we go through this prospect show here today.
Well, I'm glad to have you here, Zach. The columns are fantastic that you've been writing, you along with Maria Torres, and yeah. So it's a Prospect Tuesday, so I feel like it's a great day for you to be here, and you know, looking forward to doing what we do here normally, talking about the latest prospect news and doing a level roundup. We're going to talk about Double A players today, and anyways, no further delay here. I'm ready when you are.
So we've had a number of debuts, and I take it in this part of the show, we kind of figure out like who's worth picking up in your league if you haven't already. Obviously, Michael Harris is probably the highest profile one. You know, he's a top 100 prospect. He's the guy Braves fans have been excited about for a while. He's raking at Double A. You know, I was very surprised when I was reading up on the Braves situation that Adam Duvall had been playing a lot of center field. I covered Duvall when he was with the Reds way back in the day, and he, you know, he was really good at left field, but left field, the Great American Ballpark, is like easy for anybody to play. Adam Dunn played there. And so it was really surprising. So it would seem to me, right, that there's just like a lot of opportunity for a guy like Michael Harris to get at bats, especially since a lot of their outfielders have not been producing.
Yeah, it would definitely seem so. And so far, since he's been called up, the Braves have only faced right-handed starters. So it's still a little bit hard to tell what his playing time is going to be against lefties. But even if it's that worst case scenario of Harris having a large side platoon role, that's pretty exciting, given what he's done in the minors. 305 average at Double A Mississippi, good power speed combination with 5 homers, 11 steals, and the sort of player, I think, because he does have that across the board kind of appeal, that unlike a lot of the players that we will be talking about here, he's one that certainly, if he's still available in your 12 team leagues, he's certainly fair game to pick up. And unfortunately, this call-up came right after we did do our Friday waiver show, so we didn't really get to talk about his fantasy appeal at that point. But he is still out there in some 12-team leagues, and it's not too shallow, I think, to be rostering Harris.
Yeah, I feel like from covering the league for a while, when a guy gets called up from Double-A, especially a high-profile guy like that, you kind of have to be on guard that, you know, he might not be there to stay. Right. But I when I was looking around how the Braves have done this year, obviously they're in win now mode. So if he's going to perform, I'm sure they'll keep him around. And they just really haven't got any production out of the outfield. And so it seems like there's just a lot of runway for him. Right. Another guy called up to a team that's not getting a lot of production at the positions he plays, Josh Smith in Texas. He came up yesterday, kind of got overshadowed by Eli White and that amazing catch he made to rob a home run. But what do you got on Josh Smith?
Well, you know, maybe that plays to our advantage because, yeah, I think Smith did get a little bit overshadowed by that big game that Eli White had. But I think that the playing time, you know, certainly that's a concern that you might have. But I think that the opportunity is there. He is on the roster because Brad Miller went on the IL with the hip injury. And I could very easily see Miller coming back and maybe seeing a little bit less playing time than he has been seeing for the Rangers so far this year. So, you know, with that said, anytime you have a prospect getting called up, we've seen the whole range, you know, this year, last year we saw where players can really have a rough adjustment, you know, but I think if Smith is one of those prospects that does hit the ground running, and it certainly looks that way, you know, like you said, he had a really big game on Monday night. You know, if he can keep that going, then I think there's definitely an opportunity for Smith to continue playing. And coming up from AAA, so you don't have those concerns that you have with Michael Harris about, well, is he maybe being rushed up a little too quickly? And also giving you a power speed combination. So I think maybe not quite as broad of an appeal as Harris. Fantasy wise, I wouldn't really be going after Josh Smith in a 12 team league.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Smith is a completely different caliber of prospect than Michael Harris, right? But I mean, the Rangers are kind of in a weird spot. Like, I know they spent all this money. Are they trying to compete in the West? I know they played better as of late. it to me, if Brad Miller comes back and you think he's like your best person at the position and you are trying to compete, you maybe go that direction. But if you're kind of looking at this year as a, okay, we're kind of taking a step forward kind of year and contend in 2023, I'm not sure that Brad Miller is the guy that I, you know, plant in the way of an intriguing prospect. It might be more valuable to see what Josh Smith can do if it comes down to the two of them. Now, Nick Plummer with the Mets, not really a prospect anymore, former first round pick, but very exciting what he's done. His first couple games, hitting back to back home runs, or home runs and back to back games, I should say. But he's kind of who knows what he is, by the way. And then we're kind of waiting to see what happens with Brandon Nimmo's wrist to really figure out what to do with him, right?
Yeah, I think if Plummer hadn't had those back to back games with home runs, that this might be just more of a really quick conversation of, yep, Plummer's up, but he's just filling an outfield slot while Nimmo's out. But Nimmo should be back. He could be back, in fact. Here on Tuesday, certainly isn't expected to be out long. So this could be just, essentially one and done for Plummer, but not necessarily.
Yorme's playing really well. Obviously, Mazika is a catcher. You got to have a backup catcher, especially with their main catcher out for so long. It just doesn't seem like the roster math makes sense if Nimmo is healthy. It maybe be one thing, like you said, if Nick Plummer was, 3 years younger and had been performing like a top prospect the whole way, but it's not. He's like a post prospect now. And maybe he's a major leaguer or a bench bat for somebody, but the Mets are pretty stacked. I'm not sure they really need to be leaning on a guy with that kind of profile. Yeah. Oscar Gonzalez, he's a guy I'd never heard of before. And only to learn that he was the Cleveland's top international signing in 2014, which seems like a very long time ago. And then he just kind of fell off prospects list the last couple of years. And now he's in the big leagues playing the outfield for the Guardians, where, famously they have struggled to find people to play the outfield.
Yeah. So that's an ideal situation for Gonzalez and, putting up nice numbers in the upper minors. So, he has definitely gone a little bit under the radar, and I understand that's a different show on this podcast. But I think that the it fits here, so there's an opportunity here for Gonzalez to see some playing time. He's hitting so far. I mean, there's really not been any power to speak of. It's just been four games, but hitting for average and in AAA this year, really making a lot of contact. Just a 14.3% strikeout rate. Now that also comes with a walk rate that's under 4%, which is exactly what he had in 2021 at the AAA level. So, I mean, this is somebody who very consistently is profiled as not having a lot of plate discipline, but he has brought that strikeout rate down. Maybe there's a little bit of pop there that can translate from AAA to the major leagues. And, Zach, as you highlighted, I mean, there is a playing time opportunity here. So that alone makes Gonzalez somebody that's got to be rostered in deeper formats. And I'm also talking about mixed leagues here too. So not just AL only, but 14, 15 team, maybe not 14. I think 14 is sort of the borderline, but definitely should be rostered in 15 team leagues.
Yeah. I would guess with how the Guardians have started the year, there's no reason not to play a guy like this, if figure out what he can do. And I'm sure in a fantasy context, that's helpful. Like I only play fantasy football, but I imagine for, especially in baseball, it's helpful to have kind of like predictability of who's going to be playing when and not have to be guessing. And rebuilding teams offer a lot of predictability when they don't have a lot of good players. So they just got to give that run to the young guys. Although I would also imagine this isn't going to happen anytime soon, I don't think. But George Valera is their top outfield prospect in the minors. He's in Double A and he's starting to come on. And he reached Double A at the end of last year, so maybe he gets up to Triple A at some point this year. One of those outfield spots is waiting for him. And he's a much more high priority guy than Oscar Gonzalez. So that's just something to think about long term, but that's not going to happen in the next several months, I wouldn't think. Cody Clemens, and these are a lot of situations we've talked about so far, except for maybe Nick Plummer with the Mets, where a guy has been hitting well at AAA. He's a prospect. He comes up into a situation where no one's really producing and the team is kind of disappointing. So why not bring him up and see what he can do? And that seems like the case for Cody Clemens.
Yeah. And I don't know how much we're going to see actually from Clemens, because he got called up on Monday, didn't play Monday, is not in the lineup on Tuesday. So
I think he's supposed to start the second game of a doubleheader.
Okay, well, then that would make sense. That would make, yeah, absolutely make sense. So we'll get our first look in the major leagues of Cody Clemens then. Still, that's one out of the first three games for him. And he's filling a spot, a roster spot, while Robbie Grossman is out. So, yeah, it's not that you look at the Tigers outfield and you see just, you know, absolutely unmovable obstacles there. I mean, they've been pretty much rolling out consistently an outfield of Daz Cameron, Derek Hill, and Willie Castro. So I guess this week, you know, you watch the playing time. Maybe there's some AL only appeal there. I really sort of hesitate to go beyond that, because it's not like Clemens is really a top prospect. And I think if not for, you know, the last name, maybe we would pay even less attention to him. But then again, he's in an organization on a team where there could be opportunity, not big obstacles, like I was saying. So I think you watch the playing time and you go from there.
Yeah, I think from what I've read, he's kind of limited to the right side of the field. He's, you know, he's played second, first, and right field, I think. And maybe right field's where that opportunity is. He came up with second baseman, but and Jonathan Scope has not been playing well, but they just gave him $7.5 million this offseason. So I'm not sure we're at the point yet where you kind of decide, okay, the Jonathan Scope era is over and we're going to play Cody Clemens. And like you said, he's kind of a mid-tier prospect. So he's not someone that, you know, the Tigers have been banking on for a long time. He's not Spencer Torkelson. It'll be interesting to see how much play he gets, right? Just because there does seem to be some opportunity, but only to kind of fit certain parts of his profile, you know, maybe only in right field. And then J.P. Sears made a start in a doubleheader. Doubleheaders creating all sorts of opportunities for guys this year, all these doubleheaders. But he comes up, he pitches well for the Yankees in a doubleheader. He's got great numbers at AAA. But it seems like the Yankees' rotation is pretty full. So what do you expect out of him?
I mean, it's obviously very full, but also not that much depth. So I think, especially with Luis Gil out, that there's maybe an opportunity for spot starts down the road. Maybe as an injury replacement, should there be a need for that? Like you said, really great numbers at AAA so far this year. But he's 26 years old, just like Clemens. So you do have to take, I think, those minor league numbers the last couple of years at AAA and also AA with a little bit of a grain of salt. But yeah, it certainly backed it up in a really impressive first start in the major leagues. He's made three appearances so far, a couple in relief. So at this point, I think he's more of an AL-only stash and not like a must stash, or must roster. But if you got an extra spot, pitching is always hard to find in those AL-only leagues, and maybe there's going to be other opportunities down the road.
Now, the next guy on our list has had a similar opportunity, pitched in doubleheader, Ethan Small. Found it kind of interesting, though, they sent him down right after, and despite having kind of an open spot. Now, Brandon Woodruff is hurt. He's got an ankle sprain. He's on the IL. Freddie Peralta is also on the IL. He's expected to be out for a while. And they call Small up. He pitches. They send him down. So he's got to be down for 15 days at least, unless there's another injury. So that would seem to suggest that to fill their rotation spot, the Brewers are going to be going to someone else, right?
It would seem, we've seen this before with teams where they, you know, they'll make moves, they'll make some sort of move to get a player back up. But yeah, it would seem to me that probably they'll go with somebody else. I'm not quite sure, who that might be. And I'm looking at roster resource, because it's, you know, sometimes they just have kind of placeholder players there. They've got Josh Lindblom listed. So, I don't know if that's, you know, really reality or not, but we could see Small, back up at some point, I think, even if it's not necessarily for the next turn, and got some good numbers this year. So I think you just monitor that situation.
Yeah. And then another guy getting a start in a doubleheader, I believe, Matt Swarmer. I don't think he appears on any top prospect list for the Cubs. This is a guy I've never heard of. And I know for Cubs fans, they just know that he's not Caleb Killian, which is who they want in the major leagues. But he pitched pretty well. And, you know, Drew Smyly might be hurt. So, you know, he kind of put two and two together there a little bit.
Yeah. And I'm sure, yeah, we would all like to see Killian up and Swarmer's 28-year-old. So, yeah, this is definitely a player that I was not aware of. But yeah, just a terrific debut for him against the Brewers in that doubleheader. And at AAA so far this year, 2.08 ERA, some nice ratios, 42 strikeouts in 39 innings. So, you know, not like overwhelming strikeout rate, but... you know, I know this is getting sort of boring saying this about a lot of these players, but again, you monitor his status, monitor the situation, because he could be very useful in an NL-only league. You know, any one of those formats where you just it's really good to have a pitcher who's getting some innings and could be competent. So I think that's at this point where Swarmer's appeal is really with the ceiling.
So I got a question for you. He's kind of different a little bit than J.P. Sears and Ethan Small, who are kind of more known quantities. You know, Ethan's kind of a prospect. J.P. Sears is you know, I think he's a like at the back end of the Yankees list, but he's done enough now maybe to have some predictability. But when a guy is completely off the radar like Matt Swarmer, he makes one good start, and there's still some uncertainty whether he's still in the rotation. Just how do you approach that?
From a fantasy perspective, I think pretty much, as I was saying, like I think he's the sort of player, and I've done this in my AL and NL only leagues, where you just you take a flyer, you put the $1 or maybe $2 bid out for the player. You know, maybe you go to if you really need to fill that vacant slot, because in super deep leagues like that, it's fairly common to have a vacant slot that you need to fill, and just hope that it works out, because I tend to think that whenever Swarmer's next start might be, it probably isn't going to go as well, given the minor league track record. But you never know. So I think in leagues where you don't have a lot to lose, you take that very low cost, low risk gamble. I don't really see any point in taking any action beyond that.
And then, all right, so let's update a couple of injuries. We got some guys coming back, some very high-profile guys coming back. So Shane Baz threw 4 scoreless innings in a rehab start with AAA Durham. He's coming off of a elbow surgery, not like not Tommy John. He had some loose bodies removed. But he's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. He's eligible to come off the 60-day injured list on June 6th, which would be a convenient 6 days from his last start. And so that, you know, I'm sure I would be surprised if there are people out there with fantasy teams that didn't have Shane Baz on their team. I don't know why you just let a guy like that go. But are you just hoping, praying that the next one's in the majors?
Yeah, and it sounds like there's a good chance of him. He's performed really well in these rehab stints. Like you said, that return date is coming up at a very convenient time to dovetail with, you know, what would be approximating a normal amount of rest for Baz. So, I think, you know, get him ready. I mean, he's widely rostered. So I would say he's possibly still out there in some 12 teamers, could definitely be out there in some 10 team leagues. And this is an impact pitcher. This is somebody who, even though he may get ramped up a little bit at the beginning, won't necessarily go as deep. Again, just going 4 innings in his last start, but maybe a little bit shy on innings for the first couple of starts. Maybe not going to be in top form right away, but within short order, he could be a really big-time impact pitcher. And he belongs in 10-team leagues. He belongs definitely belongs in 12-team leagues. So if you're in those types of formats, you absolutely have to go check and see if Baz is available, because he's one of those players that is worth the double-digit percentage FAB expenditure this coming weekend if he does happen to be out there, because it's one of the few pitchers. You know, I know we're going to talk maybe a little bit about Grayson Rodriguez later. I mean, there's a handful of pitchers out there that could really make a huge contribution who might still be out there, and Baz is certainly one of them.
So how do you weigh just the obviously – you mentioned his innings. He's pitched 4 innings as far as he stretched out. The Rays also have a reputation for not really pushing guys too long. I don't get the sense that they're so dogmatic about that if they have like a true stud like Shane Baz is, that, oh, okay, this guy's you're going to face the order 2 times through and that's it. You know, I think they make exceptions for exceptional pitchers. But how does that factor in kind of your calculus?
Just a little bit. I mean, if it were somebody, well, I'll use an example actually of a pitcher who's already in the rotation, and that's Drew Rasmussen. And when he was more in the kind of swing role. As much as I like the skill profile, that was something I really worried about him. It's something I still worry about a little bit with Ryan Yarbrough. And so with somebody, like you said, who's exceptional, like Shane Baz, I don't worry about it as much, because even if he's just giving me five innings, they could be five innings with eight strikeouts. So I really discount that concern a lot with a pitcher of his caliber.
And then another very highly ranked prospect, Riley Green, is activated from the injured list, coming back from a foot fracture. He is in AAA Toledo with the Tigers. He has never appeared in the major leagues yet. Unlike Baz came up last year. But as we talked about it before with Cody Clemens, there's some opportunity out there. But you probably figure, right, that the Tigers kind of want to – Green's played like three minor league games this season as he's come back. And they want to get his footing underneath him before they bring him up, right?
I would think so. How much, I really don't know. I mean, I've heard other analysts talk about how he could really be on the verge of coming up. That's entirely possible. I think maybe somewhat of an analogy would be when Adley Rutschman came off of his IL assignment and just was playing for AAA Norfolk. And it was a few weeks for him. It also maybe took him a little bit longer to get going than a lot of us were expecting at the AAA level. But once he was locked in, Orioles called him up. So could be a similar situation with Riley Green. I would be very surprised if he wasn't on the Tigers roster by like late June. And it very easily could be, you know, quite a bit sooner than that. So he's somebody that you definitely would need to stash right now. I do have a bit of a concern about batting average with Green, because while his strikeout rates in the minors are not exorbitant, they're high enough that you figure, again, looking at major league pitching for the first time, those rates that were in the mid to upper 20s in the minors could be in the lower to mid 30s in the majors. And that could be a real drain on batting average. But anytime you get a player with the potential to get a lot of playing time and offer both power and speed, that's somebody that you are looking at it in 12 team leagues and deeper.
Yeah, I would guess, like, if you're the Tigers, and I know they expected to be better, but they weren't ever going to be like contending, right? But assuming you don't want to put Riley Green in a position to fail and like bring him up when he doesn't have his rhythm and he's just going to get eaten alive by major league pitching, because that's going to, you know, it's going to do nobody any good. You're just going to have to send him back down. But if you give him a couple weeks to get his rhythm, why not have him in the majors? If he's considered a major league ready player, what else you got going on in the outfield in Detroit? Not much. So get him up there. And then a milestone. This is a guy I know decently well as a former Diamondbacks reporter. Dominic Fletcher, his hit streak ends at 30 games. Now, I wrote about this in today's minor league notebook. Technically, 30 starts. He had one pinch hit appearance in a game that he didn't start, and he did not get on base. But that's an incredible run. And hit streaks can be kind of fluky sometimes. All it takes is one every day to get there. You know, you could bat 250 or even 200 if you get five plate appearances to have a hit streak. But he's been breaking. He started out AA Amarillo. He got promoted up to AAA Reno. He is hitting really well, coming back from a down year last year. Kind of puts him on the map as maybe getting a major league opportunity at some point.
So, you know, my question in regard to Fletcher, who, by the way, he's the younger brother of David Fletcher, I believe. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. But yeah, a little bit of a different profile. And my question is, obviously, he's showing that he doesn't have a whole lot left to prove in the minor leagues. But what is the path for him in terms of playing time there? Because I would think that
is not set up, despite him hitting super well, is not set up very well for him. The Diamondbacks have a glut of left-handed hitting outfielders, young ones. They've got an old one in David Peralta, who's having a solid year so far, and seems, you know, he's a pretty integral part of the clubhouse. Then they've got Alec Thomas, who's already up there and playing really well. They've got Jake McCarthy, who's serving as kind of the fourth outfielder, who hit really well after being sent down earlier in the year. They got Pavin Smith, who is hitting pretty well, had a big homer yesterday, playing a lot of right field. All those guys are left-handed. I'm not sure where you squeeze one more of those guys on the roster. And you also have to, you know, eventually Carson Kelly's going to be back in catching, and that might mean more of Dalton Varsho in the outfielder, another left-handed hitter. So I'm just not sure how that all stacks up for a guy like Dominic Fletcher, where he squeezed it in there. Who's he taking the bats away from? All those guys are going pretty well.
Yeah, the only path I can really see is maybe when Kelly comes back, that maybe he just catches less and you got Varsho maybe catching more and maybe McCarthy losing some at-bats. But that, I don't know, that seems like a pretty tenuous path.
Yeah, I think the difference between Fletcher and McCarthy is McCarthy can play center field. And I think that's a kind of a notable skill set that he has. He's a really good center fielder, as is Alec Thomas. And so if you're looking at kind of the corners, you've got an established veteran in David Peralta who's not coming out of the game against right-handed pitching. And then on the other side, Pavin Smith is pretty much an everyday guy now. Maybe you can squeeze someone else out there when he relieves Christian Walker at first base. But even then, you've got Cooper Hummel, who's playing some left field and is a switch hitter. You've got Jordan Luplo, who plays some right field against lefties. He's done really well. He's a right-handed hitter. The barn's just pretty full, I think, at this point.
Yeah, no, that is my concern. And I think you've sort of validated my worries about going after Fletcher, even in NL-only leagues. But yeah, given how red hot he's been. And, you know, he ends that streak and then he comes back almost hitting for the cycle and getting four hits in a game on Sunday. So he's obviously not cooling off. And I just don't know what the Diamondbacks do with him.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a next year problem. You know, this is David Peralta's last year under contract. So, yeah. You know, jumping up from the AA to the majors, like not a lot of guys do that. It should be considered a good year if he finishes at AAA. But the way he's going, you know, you'd like to give him a run, but it's just hard to say, okay, I'm going to do it at the expense of all of these other guys. Some trending players, a guy who's not blocked at all, or at least shouldn't be, Vinny Pasquantino, who has been raking. He has 14 home runs at AAA, and then he plays first base. You look at who's playing first base in Kansas City. It's Carlos Santana. How is he hitting? Not well at all. The Royals are terrible. Why is this guy not in the majors? I'm sure that's what everybody who has him on their fantasy roster is wondering.
Yeah, it is. And even those of us who don't have Pasquantino anywhere, I mean, it is. And there's always, you know, at least a handful of players every year where it just seems like it's an eternity before they get called up. Maybe it's, you know, less so now that, you know, with the restructuring of the CBA and there seems to be less roster service time manipulation going on, that it's been less of an issue. But Pasquantino, yeah, he's still out there, you know, apparently going into the month of June, still raking in AAA. So I don't know what the holdup is, but it's hard to see how he could be down much longer. So I think he definitely is in that category of players that you have to stash right now, because even though it seems like he's going to be in AAA forever, it seems very unlikely that he would be. And you want to be able to add him to your roster before the news comes out that a call-up is imminent or that it's already happened. And then, you know, everybody's spending what every last penny left of their fab budget to try to add him.
Yeah. Do you think he's set up well for success once he hits the majors, just based off of his minor league numbers?
I think so. I mean, there's just an awful lot to like there. A lot of power, and you know, it doesn't come at the expense necessarily of batting average either. So, again, it's always hard to tell exactly who's going to be ready. And you know, I certainly was convinced that, you know, Jose Miranda was going to be, you know, a lot better than he was. Just, you know, one example. You know, a lot of players who have struggled coming right away. But I mean, Pasquantino's just been really consistent at each level, not striking out a lot, hitting for average, hitting for a lot of power, and in fact, hitting for more power in AAA than at the lower levels. So even as he's climbing the ladder, he's not slowing down. In fact, he's speeding up. So I take those as all really good signs.
And then Brian Bello, one of the Red Sox top prospects, he's in AAA now. He's pitched, I guess, what, three starts, I think, is a 3.18 ERA. It's probably not enough there to bring him up to Boston right now. But it seems like a guy that, you know, you could be looking at later in the season, right, in the big league rotation.
I think so. I don't feel compelled to be trying to add him in fantasy right now, mostly, and we've talked about this on some previous episodes, just because of trying to find that path where you know, he'd force the issue, and then there's just an obvious place to get him into the Red Sox rotation. Maybe they go to a six-man rotation. That might actually be the most believable path, but you know, it's not as if, you know, Michael Walker, Rich Hill, that, you know, you could absolutely just see them hold a rotation spot for 6 months. I think even Nick Pivetta potentially see somebody who's very widely rostered right now. But I mean, I could see him being vulnerable at some point. So I don't know when Bayo comes up. It's just a matter of time. But I do think that, you know, we as fantasy managers have some time to wait and to roster him.
And then here's a guy that should start a text thread with Vinny Pasquantino. Grayson Rodriguez, but both these guys wondering, why am I not in the majors? I know that the Orioles have tried to build him up slowly, right? He's pitched 13 innings over his last two starts, so that's a good sign. But I know that I think Dan Connolly, even with us, has written that the front office is playing it very careful with him, which is too bad for all of us who would like to watch him pitch or have him on our fantasy teams, because he's been awesome. 2.32 ERA, 76 strikeouts against 14 walks in 50 innings, man, it's just bananas. So, I mean, it seems like this guy should be more imminent to arrive than Bayo, right?
I would think so. I mean, first of all, there's a much clearer path to a rotation spot in the Orioles rotation than there would be in the Red Sox rotation. Kyle Bradish hasn't been all that effective. So, I mean, maybe he gets sent down, but that wouldn't necessarily have to be the case. You could see, well, Tyler Wells is coming off of a very good start, but, you know, you could certainly see somewhere a space for Rodriguez in the Orioles rotation. I don't think that's anything that anybody's really staying up nights worrying about. And, yeah, you alluded to the, you know, how deep into games that Rodriguez is going. And for his eight starts, not going six innings in any of them, usually going in the neighborhood of, you know, four or so. But yeah, six in the second of most recent starts, seven in the last one. Maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part, Zach, but I got it. You know, to me, that's a sign that the Orioles mean business with Grayson Rodriguez. And this has got to be happening soon, I would think.
Yeah, Baltimore fans deserve it, that's for sure. So our level roundup. Today we're looking at AA hitters and pitchers that are interesting. I find AA to be like the most interesting level. You look at AAA rosters now, it's just filled with a bunch of guys who've been around, bounced up and down between the majors. AA is where the prospects are, and they're close enough to where you can kind of really see kind of their major league arrival down the road, that they look real, like they're becoming real major league players. Although this first guy I hadn't really heard of, and I go through every 2 weeks when it's my turn to do our minor league notebook, I go through every system in baseball, just kind of clicking around on Baseball Reference, seeing what's interesting. And I am amazed that I missed that Esturi Ruiz with the Padres had stolen 33 bases. That is bananas. How did I miss that? That guy seems super interesting.
Yeah, really. It almost defies belief. And especially because it's not just 33 stolen bases in 45 games with, you know, one home run and a 250 average. I mean, this is somebody who's just lighting up the stat page in every column. He's got 8 home runs. He's only striking out 17.8% of the time. He's practically doubled his walk rate from a year ago when he was in Double A for the first time. So it's just a breakout season in his second Double A campaign in the Padres system. So I don't know what to make of it, because again, it is 45 games, and previously, Ruiz wasn't really that high on prospect list because the strikeout rate was just high enough that it made him a little suspect. There wasn't that much power. And then the steals. I mean, he's stolen a lot of bases every year, but it's just, you know, it's video game numbers. I don't know how to wrap my head around 33 steals in 45 games. And
so the first thing I thought about with the steals was this year in Double A, maybe throughout all the minors, I'm not sure. They adopted the rule that they had in one of the A ball levels last year about only 2 pickoff throws per plate appearance. And if you have a third, it's a balk. So if you pick over twice, suddenly that guy's got free reign to go. My initial thought was like, oh, that's got to be a product of that rule. But then he was at Double A last year when they didn't have that rule, and he stole a ton of bases then. So that seems like it's legit.
I suppose. I mean, there may be something to that because, yeah, that first go around to Double A, 36 steals, but at 84 games, so almost double the games and almost exactly the same number of steals. But, I mean, look, if he had half the steals now, if he was coming in with 17 steals, with the rest of that stat line, it would still be pretty exciting. But 33 steals is, like you said, it's just bananas. And I don't really expect that kind of rate to translate anywhere. But, it, you know, whatever regression comes as he moves up the ladder, this is suddenly a super exciting prospect.
Yeah, and it's hard to handicap this, but, you know, in the new CBA, the commissioner has the ability to institute a lot of these rule changes on his own. I think it was like 45 days notice, which just means he'll do it over the offseason. So maybe that pickoff rule will come to the majors next year. Who knows? And suddenly a guy like that is, you know, he's like a 70, 80 steal player. I don't know how you handicap that as a fantasy manager if you're looking to at guys to stash or maybe draft for next season, but that's at least something to think about. This next guy I know very well. I did a big story on him. I've covered him for a long time. Corbin Carroll with the Diamondbacks. I'm a huge believer in this guy. Amazing player. He's like, you know, 5 foot 10, 180 pounds. He already has 12 home runs. He's impossible to strike out, it seems like. He's stolen 15 bags. Ironically, he's the only of the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks used to have several prospects at AA Amarillo in the outfield. Corbin Carroll was always the best of the bunch, and the other ones have all been promoted, and he's still there at AA. But he's coming off missing almost all of last year with shoulder surgery. It doesn't seem to have affected him too much, but he can't be long for the AA level at this point, right?
I would agree with that. And, you know, like you said, the Diamondbacks just have lots of good young outfielders. But, you know, this is one that you figure that they will make room for at some point. I don't know that's necessarily any time this year. I would defer to you on that. But, you know, if not this year, certainly next year will be a big deal in fantasy.
I could see if he gets to AAA, and I can't imagine what purpose is being served by keeping him a AA right now after he's raked for 2 months. If he gets to AAA, I could see him coming up at the end of the year. But you know, the like we talked about with Dom Fletcher, the roster dominoes that have to line up correctly. There have to be an opportunity somewhere. Unlike Fletcher, I don't think he's a guy that, you know, Fletcher's kind of blocked and he's not the type of prospect that you move someone out of the way for. I think Corbin Carroll is that type of prospect. That might be the difference, but by next year, certainly he's a big leaguer at some point. All right, let's run through a few more of these guys. These next two guys I knew from the fall league that were really big performers, scouts really liked a lot. Ezekiel Tovar, shortstop with the Rockies, and Logan Ohapi, who has continued to kind of rake after performing really well in the fall with the Phillies. Both very exciting prospects who maybe started out as kind of lesser known prospects, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about both of them, too. I mean, Tovar putting up really great numbers as a 20-year-old at AA, power and speed, 10 homers, 16 steals in the Colorado system. So, you know, I'm certainly excited to see how that skill set would play out with Coors Field as a home backdrop. And Ohapi hitting for average 300, a few steals. 8 home runs, and I'm this is something I always check with any Phillies prospect at AA Redding, is what are the home road splits? It comes up pretty much anytime we talk about a Phillies prospect, and I'm always a little bit skeptical to see, well, how is that going to play at Lehigh Valley, and how is that going to play in Philadelphia? Well, Ohapi, he's got the 8 home runs. Only 2 have come at Redding, which is just a notorious home run ballpark. So that's a terrific sign, and apparently he's expected that he's going to stay behind the plate. I don't know if he moves Real Muto. I don't know how that works, but in whatever role he's in, I mean, as long as he catches enough to have catcher eligibility, I think this is an exciting prospect.
Yeah, I think scouts like him defensively a lot. They think he does a lot of good things there. And I think it's been talked about, like, the eventual plan with Real Muto is he moves to first base, right? Or DH is more. Now the Phillies created like the worst roster to allow him to do that eventually, but that would seem to make the most sense and get the better, younger defender, fresher defender back there, get them both in the lineup. All right. We got a run of infielders here. Very notable infielders. A lot of them. Gunnar Henderson with the Orioles, Aurelvis Martinez with the Blue Jays, Leover Peguero, former Diamondbacks prospect, now with the Pirates, Matt McClain, first round pick of the Reds last year, and Lennon Sosa with the White Sox.
Yeah, really interesting group. Henderson, by the way, we could have easily talked about as a trending player because he is getting picked up in leagues. I don't know if it's just on the virtue of the good numbers he's putting up as a 20-year-old in AA, but 287, 7 homers, 12 steals, low strikeout rate. So obviously there's a ton to like there. Peguero, having a nice season, a little bit more power this year to go with 11 steals. So they're pretty intriguing. Now you mentioned Martinez and McClain. They both are striking out a lot, but Martinez in particular, I find just interesting. I don't know if he's going to be good as he gets up to AAA or the majors, but he's hitting only .218, but he has 14 home runs already, 20 years old, so young for the level, and just ridiculously high fly ball rates. So definitely an all or nothing type hitter that could be really fun at the major league level. I just don't know if there's enough there besides the power and the approach to actually get him to the majors.
Yeah, McClain, I was very surprised to see him striking out 32% of the time. I wrote a story about him when he got drafted, because he was the rare first rounder who goes draft in the first round at a high school and turned down the money, turned down like $3 million to go to school. And it paid off because he did go higher 3 years later out of UCLA. But he had this reputation of being like a really advanced hitter. You know, there's some question about his defensive home, like whether he's a second baseman or a shortstop. But I wouldn't have ever guessed he was a guy that was going to get to strike out 32% of the time. That's wild.
Yeah, it's, you know, strange to see, you know, what happens when they advance to levels, you know, just sort of like the flip of Peguero, where he's really cut down the strikeouts as he's moved up. And that's probably the rarer thing to accomplish.
And then lastly, of our hitters here, Jordan Diaz, who was one of the first players in minor league baseball I know to strike out on a pitch clock violation. I saw that. But he's having a nice little season for the A's at Double A.
Yeah, yeah. Good contact hitter who's just hitting with a bit more power so far this year. So that's, you know, that's a really encouraging development. And I was not aware of that little bit of trivia. So I'm
yeah, if not, if he'd just gotten in the box a little more quickly, that 13.6 strikeout rate would be even lower. How great is that? So just get in the box, Jordan. Come on. And then we got some arms here. So I'll just run through all these at once. Yuri Perez, 19 years old in Double A, having a nice year. We got Reese Olson with the Tigers, Taj Bradley, one of the top prospects for the Rays, yet another with the Rays. Mike Burrows with the Pirates, they could really use some nice pitching. And Levi Stout with the Mariners, all having intriguing seasons at the AA level.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys are interesting. I mean, Perez, just by virtue of the fact that he's doing what he's doing at the age of 19 in AA, has a 3.71 ERA. That's really just a product of a low strand rate, as you would guess, for somebody who's got 50 strikeouts and 9 walks in 34 innings. You have to wonder when he'll move up, but doing some great things there. Olson, we've talked about within the last few weeks on this podcast, probably the last time we did a AA roundup, and just another Tigers pitching prospect who's really making a case for himself, and it has actually been even better since the last time that we talked about him. His last three starts, he's just given up one run, 29 strikeouts, 4 walks, and 14 and 2/3 innings. So got to think he's moving up soon. And like you said, Bradley, just another great Rays pitching prospect. Burrows in a system where, you know, maybe there's more opportunity than some of these other guys. And Levi Stout, not probably the least impressive numbers out of this group, but he was under consideration for being called up when Matt Brash got sent down. Of course, it was George Kirby that came up, but you have to think that Stout is then the next in line. So particularly in AL only, just something to keep tabs on there.
Yeah. Well, all very good stuff. This is going to help fantasy managers everywhere, I'm sure. And hopefully they haven't realized that I'm an idiot, doesn't know what he's talking about. But Al, you definitely do know what you're talking about. I appreciate you carrying me on this as I'm filling in for DVR. But that's our show. Thanks for tuning in. And Under the Radar will be out on Wednesday, so tune back in for that.